If you're just joining us, this is a Radio Geekly Live panel from the Portland Zine Symposium 2017. I'm Jess, joined here by Conch and Kyle, some of our collective members. And we're going to open the floor up to more Q&A if any of you have questions, comments about comics as resistance.
I make comics. I don't know, I just think it's interesting how, because I've kind of realized lately with my work that being political and making art sometimes is just like still making art about like my art is a lot about like queer themes and like gender and sexuality and being like, I don't know, this is a stressful time, everything's terrible, but I'm still here. This is like my point of view is still here and like still putting it out there is like what I see political art as. And then sometimes I forget about like, oh, there's people actually like at rallies spreading art in all these different venues is really interesting.
But I think still making comics with what you think of the world is just, that's still an important form of activism. Yeah. You're just making your voice heard within all, like, the mess that's happening that everyone's trying to figure out.
And I think, like, finding community through art is so important.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, kind of its own form of resistance of, like, I feel like there's a limited number of, like, rallies I can go to.
Okay.
But it's, like, but I've been going to, like, planning meetings for the Zine Symposium every week because that's like something that's like its own form of resistance, even if it's not as direct and overt.
Yeah.
This is a big town for queer anthologies, like comics and sci-fi and stuff. I mean, any in particular that have inspired you or folks that you've interacted with?
I mean, I don't know. I have my own like drawing group, and we're all pretty inspire each other. We're the Soundgrounds Wrecking Crew.
Soundgrounds Wrecking Crew.
Yeah.
Awesome. I like, Liz, how you said community, that you've built your own community, because I think it's really important when it comes to collecting ideals and actually coming together, because a lot of us nowadays, I feel like, are more individualistic.
Mm-hmm.
And we have our own agendas and we have our own ideologies. But in reality, there are more people like us than there are not like us, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm really glad that you said community was important, because being at community radio, we see the benefits of joining together as collectives, as like-minded people. Even though we have differences, we can all come together to talk about things like comics and stuff like that. So I'm really glad that you said that.
And speaking of resistance, you know, I think one of the tools that oligarchies and, you know, anti-democratic forces like to use is alienation. And they like to foster an atmosphere where people feel like they're the only one. They're the only one feeling like they do. They're the only one having financial problems. They're the only ones having discontent with the way the society is going. It's really great not just to have conventions where comics artists can get together, because comics artists, I mean, it generally is a kind of a solitary pursuit. You're spending many, many hours working on your own stuff, kind of in your own head, putting it down on paper. So to get out and do mashups, to do performance, to do readings, to do events when you get together, that's incredibly empowering. That's a really powerful tool of resistance right there.
And when you were, to go back to our previous episode, when we talked to some of the gentlemen from 24 Hour Comic, getting all of those comics artists in one group to create their own comic within 24 hours, it's like there was just this mind meld of creativity all in one collective space. And you were able to interview a few of those folks. Did you get that vibe and like they felt more energized because they had other people working alongside them? Or did they still feel like, no, this is my little spot on the table. I'm going to just do my own comic over here. Like, what was your takeaway from that?
I think there definitely was a feeling of mutual inspiration. And yeah, there is sometimes a mind meld. I have seen 24-hour comics groups where somebody will get an idea from somebody else, and all of a sudden they're off and running. They might get a writer's block, and then when they see what somebody else is doing, it's not like they're copying. That spark, that can be something that it's not like you're getting inspired so much by the material, but by the inspiration behind it.
Mm.
But yeah, creative sparks can be contagious. And there's an event I've done with that's this is a slightly off topic, but there's an event I've done at the Clinton Street Theater. Dennis Nyback's got a collection of Dada films that are silent, so he'll screen several short films, and he'll invite the audience to bring in their musical instruments, and so people will bring in. And you can bring in pots and pans. You can bring in anything to bang. You can bring in a kazoo. And the whole first film is usually just a cacophony of noise. And then as the films go on, you get people listening to each other, and they're backing off a little bit, they're waiting their turn, they're coming in, they're harmonizing with other people. And the strangest thing happens, by the last film of the night, you could swear that audience soundtrack was written for that film, mm-hmm. because you've got that mind meld, like Jesse was saying. It's creativity, but it's creativity in this way that's just giving up ego and just going with the flow.
Mm. Not to digress too far into that point, but that's, to me, that seems like a very like earnest way to like depict like the Dada spirit, I think. Exactly what those filmmakers would go for.
One thing I like about zines is that when somebody picks up a zine, they feel like you've really put the thought into it, that in a way that maybe you wouldn't necessarily think of a blog post. And a lot of zines from the 90s, when I was it was really sort of the peak of small press publishing. Well, you'd have like a lot of interaction. You'd have people writing. You'd have a post office box that was listed, and people would write in, and some of those would get published. So it was much more of, if you're actually going to send a postcard or a letter into your favorite small press creator, then you've really taken the time, instead of just tapping out on your phone keyboard some burn, you know, or some half thought out comment. You know, it's mm-hmm. nice to have the impression that there's something kind of curated there. There's something that you really wanted to take the time to set down.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think that's valuable, to actually take time versus posting something really quickly on social media and then just watching the masses flood in?
Well, you know, oddly enough, I think one of the great things is layout. You know, when you're actually putting together a zine, you learn mastery of a bunch of forms. You learn about typography. You learn about graphics placement. You learn about where to lead the eye. All of that sort of thing is done for you on the web. If you have some CSS or HTML kind of thing going on, it just does everything automatically for you. And it's kind of cool to be able to do something bespoke, be able to do something that, you know, experiment with the form in a way that you don't necessarily do on the web so much, but you can really play around with it. You know, back in the 90s, I think that a lot of magazines like Plasm were really playing around, like to a huge experimental degree, with how to place images and text. Like, they just had so much freedom, the way that the full-color press was going at the time. You could do a whole lot of new things that I think has sort of fallen by the wayside since then. And zines still have that opportunity. In fact, you can do so much on your home printer these days that didn't used to be the case even 20 years ago.
It seems to me a lot of times zines kind of became more unifying than mm-hmm. they were actually dividing. I know a lot of people read about fake news on some sort of online platform, but with zines, it seems to be more to the point of like cutting all the BS out, and then here's what's actually happening.
Well, I didn't go to Occupy or many Occupy protests during the time, but just a lot of what I read was just harping on like the V theme. Like, this isn't a zine, this was more of a wider published thing, but Black Mass did an Occupy comic mm-hmm. that'll take open, similar to Resist, but not as open. I think they had like, they were just like a little bit more corporate, but there's still a lot of commentary on online activism that was going on at the time, as well as just people's thoughts about it, and a lot of like reinterpretations of the Guy Fawkes mask V theme. Like David Lloyd, who did the art for V for Vendetta, he did a portrait with the Wall Street Bull, and then V just having like one of those red capes, trying to like do like a bullfight with it. So I think like that image itself kind of reminds me, just made me think of what the public kind of wanted. And I think like once the Occupy movement kind of lost steam, that kind of reemerged within the Bernie Sanders campaign, because he was harping on a lot of those types of themes, but he articulated it in a way that had like enough leadership so people could follow him for it.
Again, going back to how zines have sort of a political agenda, so it's kind of like cyclical in a way how the origination of some of these zines started with political, satirical comics, and then now moving into other platforms, but still having that same ideal. That's interesting how it kind of just circles around.
And I was also say, I mean, like, there are plenty of zines and comics that have a political agenda behind it, or at least some sort of commentary. But a lot of it, if a creator is making their comic just in the name of art, their political and current events grievances are going to show just what their views of the world are. And I think that's what you see the most of. Like, that's what I saw in the Resist comics, both volumes. Like, in the first one, it was before the inauguration. So a lot of it was just, like, a lot of just paranoia of, like, oh my gosh, what's this guy going to do? You know, just, like, a lot of just, like, nightmare envisions of how a Trump presidency would look like. And then the second volume was, like, he was kind of in office for a while. So it was kind of going on, like, his blunders in office, like the Muslim ban, and just how, you know, the executive branch are kind of breaking down filters that the government had between the public and the 1%, for lack of a better phrase, which the government isn't always an effective filter, but it's a filter nonetheless. So I think the fact that they're systematically breaking it down isn't something that should be ignored, and something that the mainstream media is kind of focusing on the wrong things in that regard, which I guess that's common commentary. But I think with zines, they're kind of like, from zines that I read that have, like, a political angle to them, it seems like they're kind of, like, they're trying to go deeper, because they're not going for, like, the biggest story that sells the most. They're just going for what they feel is what is important to them, which also is something I see on the Nib as well, which is, I think, is Comics and Resistance doing it right, personally.
Mm. Little shout-out to the Nib. Matt Boers, who is a local cartoonist, runs the site The Nib, and it used to be part of Medium, now it's a separate thing, but brings in cartoonists from all over the world, and Matt is part of it himself. You know, I'm wondering if there are any poster artists in the room, because I think posters are kind of a cousin to zines.
Yeah, cousin. I would say so.
And, you know, just as radical often. We were talking about design a little bit, and I saw a movie recently, and it was a local director. It was called Graphic Means, and it was a history of graphic design, especially for magazines and advertisements. But, you know, as print changed, as print became more democratized, as you had copy shops and things like that, you saw album covers changing, you saw posters changing, and a lot of the people who had grown up with this design sensibility where everything was layers of four-color overlays, they thought this was anti-design, but you know, the punk aesthetic had its own thing going on. And I think both in zines and in posters, you see the punk aesthetic as being something incredibly experimental. And again, following in the Dada movement, you know, playing around with where text goes, where image goes, where the two of them interact and where the two of them can clash. You know, so design is, even if you don't think of it, it's so much in the forefront of what a zine is, more so than, say, a webcomic or a website.
Yeah. I have it's like a small digression, I guess, but
sure.
When you're talking about the importance of design and how big of an effect that is and how it's important to experiment with it, I'm a producer for the news once a week for the evening news at KBOO. And I have to make, like, some sort of, like, when I'm editing audio, when I'm shortening down, it's kind of, I have to pick, like, what's important to keep and what's important to cut. Sometimes it's obvious, you know, just, like, if anything sounds too bad or inaudible, cut that, some basic stuff. But I remember there's this one audio, it was after the June protest, where it was that alt-right protest and the counter-protest. And it was a lot of big commentary on that from people I've talked to that were there, and people that, you know, didn't like how the local media covered it, was that just, like, there's too much police intrusion, like, way more than they had to, and it was kind of calculated, and that was a whole mess. But the audio came from a city council meeting two or three days later. They were going on a different topic, but someone was talking about that protest and how, like, even though the police made a bad call being too intrusive in the protests, that the city government wasn't doing anything. And at the end of the audio, there was an applause. So I kind of just had, I just wanted to make the decision, like, should I keep the applause in or not? So it's just kind of like, and I decided to keep it in because I thought it really captured the zeitgeist of what I thought a lot of people thought of those protests. And I think when you're making zines or making comics, like having the freedom and will for experimentation to make that kind of rhetoric to explain your point, to explain like what is going on in your sphere, I think that's like a critically important thing that zines and comics offer that other mediums with more corporate interference don't have.
That's, you know, that actually touches on something that's really cool and important, which is kind of ethics, of course. You know, at KBOO we have radio ethics. Do you, like, which is more true to the story, leaving the applause in or taking it out?
Yeah, you know? I think about that a lot.
I'm not sure if this is happening this zine symposium, but in several ones in the past, and at Stumptown Comics, which is no longer a festival here in town, there were a couple of attorneys, Katie Lane and Cole Haver. And Katie is married to Dylan McConus, who's a fantastic comics creator here in town. And they were giving these fantastic two-hour workshops about fair use and copyright to creators. And this is something that, like, if you're a creator, this is really important stuff that you may not know about, not only to protect your own stuff, but also, like, what can you use? Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of zine stuff is repurposed. You might call them remixes. And there's been so much controversy over that. A bunch of cartoonists, a bunch of underground comics artists in the 70s got sued by Disney for making a comic called Air Pirates, where they're using the Disney characters.
Are you talking about the
Dan O'Neill was one of them?
I remember there's one where Mickey Mouse and Minnie were, like, working for the Mexican drug cartel.
Yes.
And they're trying to cross the border.
Yes.
And when asked, like, he's like, you know, you're using this character that looks like Mickey Mouse. He's like, no, this is Mickey Mouse, and this is his story. But yeah, I love that.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's a movie called Rip, a Remix Manifesto, which is fun. It's an interview with Dan O'Neill about that whole lawsuit and about how the copyright laws keep getting pushed out and out and out. Further and further so that Disney can keep its copyrights and not have its characters go into... The lobbyists for Disney have been trying to keep Mickey Mouse and other characters from going into public domain, and they've been just furiously doing it. It's now Lifetime plus 75 years or something like that. But so many artists have been pushing back against that, and you've had cases, of course, with DJs, you know, albums that have come out with music. I mean, that was a thing that wasn't an issue 30 years ago, and all of a sudden there's fair use extending back and forth into that. So yeah, zines definitely, a lot of review zines will use a small amount of material and repurpose it or comment on it. And that's vitally, vitally different from swiping somebody's work and using it, like you'll see websites like Funny Junk, outright swiping somebody's work, putting it on their website, putting advertisements on it, and not even attributing or doing a link back to the original creator. And they'll get cease and desist letters all the time and just keep doing it. So it's really important, if you're putting out material, either on the web or in print, to know how to protect your work from getting stolen, but also know what's fair use and, you know, really what's part of the community, what's being repurposed, what's being improved upon in some ways, where a work is transformative. And that's the important word in legal circles, is transformative. You can take, and, you know, for hundreds of years in Western civilization, we've been taking musical works and repurposing them into new ones. Mm-hmm. And the same with artworks. You know, somebody takes a drawing and they say, this is a cool drawing, I'm going to make a painting out of it. But you can't just say, I'm going to take this painting and have somebody copy it and hang it in my home and put my signature on it.
What I would be curious for each of you to answer this, what do you see as positive movements in the zine format? And where do you see the future of zines going?
I love anthologies.
Yeah, I was just thinking of the Resist comic, which I keep referencing because I think that's just... Yeah, it's an anthology doing it right. It's comics as resistance doing as right. And I think more pieces like that that have more of just like that collect a lot of voices, I think that's the way to go. And also you see it at KBOO and you see it at the one comic news website, Women Write About Comics, who I talked to the chief editor last month. And they started off as just like an open forum blog where just a lot of people can submit. And they do great work in comics journalism and strengthening diversity and resistance. So I think just gathering a collective voice, even though everyone's individual voice is just as important with the work that they do, but a way to like get like just collect all that in anthologies. I think that's a
I think anthologies are just an outgrowth of community.